From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I've chosen several articles that are relevant to ischemic heart disease. I thought that, obviously, this is an area we treat all the time. The amount of new science coming out in stable ischemic heart disease is certainly less than some of the other areas of cardiovascular medicine and surgery, but there were a couple of articles that I found interesting this week that I thought I would share with you. So we'll talk first about aspirin and discontinuation of aspirin, then an article that looks at the value of physical activity in patients with stable ischemic heart disease, and then a brief note about a fairly new agent that we're using now for stable ischemic heart disease called ivabradine. So let's start with aspirin. There's an article just in this past week or so in circulation entitled Low-Dose Aspirin Discontinuation and Risk of Cardiovascular Events, and it's a Swedish nationwide population-based cohort study. As you know, the country of Sweden has an excellent national database that allows investigators there to glean important inferences related to cardiovascular health. And in this study, Sundström and colleagues studied over 600,000 users of low-dose aspirin for either primary or secondary prevention in the Swedish population from 2005 to 2009. All of the patients were over the age of 40. They were free of cancer, and they had known adherence based on information of at least 80%. Then, over the next period of time, cardiovascular events were evaluated. And in particular, the investigators were interested in whether patterns of persistence, particularly aspirin discontinuation, led to a risk of cardiovascular events in the first 3 months after discontinuation. So over 3 years, they studied about 63,000 cardiovascular events, and they found that patients who had discontinued aspirin had a higher rate of cardiovascular events than those who continued aspirin, and the adjusted hazard was 1.37. And this meant that about for every 74 individuals who stopped aspirin, there was one event. And the risk increased shortly after discontinuation, and it continued. When they broke this down by secondary versus primary prevention, they estimated that for 36 patients who had known cardiovascular disease, one event would happen for every 36 who discontinued the aspirin. And for primary prevention, it would take 146 individuals to stop aspirin to have one event. Certainly, this brings back to the fore, I suppose, the debate about aspirin for primary prevention, less so for secondary prevention. I think this article is interesting in that for secondary prevention in patients, for example, with stable ischemic heart disease, if you have 35 or 40 of those individuals who stop aspirin, one of them, based on this observational data, is going to have an event. For primary prevention, the risk appears to be a lot lower, and it calls to mind the current guidelines. And the 2016 United States Preventive Services Task Force guidelines for primary prevention on aspirin say that low-dose aspirin is potentially indicated in individuals age 50 to 59 who have a greater than or equal to 10% cardiovascular risk by our pooled equations models from the ACC and AHA, assuming they're not at increased bleeding risk and they have a good lifespan, more than 10 years. For patients age 60 to 69, the evidence is less robust and the decision should be individualized. And for individuals less than 50 or over 70, the amount of information available just is not sufficient to make a recommendation. It appears in the right patient that for primary prevention, low-dose aspirin probably has a benefit in lowering the risk of non-fatal MI, but at an increased risk of major bleeding. And this has to be discussed pretty carefully with the patients. And in that right age category, 50 to 59, I talk to my patients about this potential. And if they have a high risk, greater than 10%, I generally will offer them 81 milligrams of aspirin per day, but advise them that if we encounter any issues with bleeding, that it's perfectly appropriate for us to discontinue at that point. I'm going to move now to physical activity. There's a wonderful paper which is out in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology by Stewart and colleagues looking at physical activity and mortality in patients with stable coronary heart disease. This is a study called Stability. It's a study of over 15,000 individuals from 39 countries who had stable coronary heart disease. And they had completed questionnaires which allowed the investigators to understand how much time they spent each week doing leisure activity, work activity, and also physical activity. They divided the cohort into sort of low activity, that's less than 3 mets of activity. Those who regularly did 3 to 6 mets, which would be like a fast walk or gardening, aerobic activity. And then those who are more vigorous, those who do more than 6 mets of activity. That would be running, lifting, strenuous work, etc. They then looked at the association between the volume of habitual exercise in these various groups and adverse outcomes over almost 4 years. The average age was 65, 20% were female. The investigators observed a decrease in mortality with more habitual exercise. And it was steeper at the lower compared to the higher exercise levels. That is, the benefit of exercise particularly was better in the patients who started out not doing a whole lot. They showed that the adjusted hazard ratio was about an 8% reduction in mortality. And the benefit was greatest in the highest risk group. So the authors concluded that in stable coronary heart disease, more physical activity is associated with lowest mortality. The largest benefit happened in our patients who are the most sedentary and our patients who are at greatest risk. So this really, I think, calls to mind that you and I, as we take care of our patients in clinic, have to first assess how much activity they're doing in daily life. And for the high-risk sedentary individuals, really go the extra mile to try to help them see the benefits of exercise, the impact on mortality, and do anything we need to do to try to get them to move in that direction. So the third article I wanted to call your attention to this week was a nice review also in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology by Caruth et al. On the clinical use of ivabradine. You know, the U.S. guidelines from the ACC/AHA on stable ischemic heart disease talk about the use first of beta blockers and the non-dihydropyridine calcium blockers, then going to nitrates and then potentially to the drug ranolazine. And then moving to the next level of therapy, we come to the drug called ivabradine, which does have a role in stable ischemic heart disease. This drug has unique electrophysiologic effects. And it's best characterized by the negative effect on the sinoatrial node, negative chronotropic effect. And its effect then on sinoatrial nodal tissue, it blocks something called the funny current, and it results in a decrease in heart rate. So this drug may be an agent that you would consider in patients who have stable ischemic heart disease, particularly perhaps those who are not able to take a beta blocker, not for a heart rate reason, but for some other reason, like depression or asthma. So this is a second line agent for patients with chronic stable angina, but it certainly appears to have benefit. Studies suggest that it increases time to exercise before people get angina, and it should be considered in our armamentarium for sure. So this has been a brief podcast this week looking at a couple of articles that I found interesting relevant to stable ischemic heart disease. We talked about discontinuation of aspirin. We talked about the value of physical activity in these patients. And a brief note about a newer agent, ivabradine, and its potential role for treating these folks. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. And all of this material can be found online on the American College of Cardiology's website. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next week, I hope you have a great day, and I'll be talking to you again soon. Thank you.